It's not good when you start with four guys not practicing. You don't want that going into camp. Usually none, occasionally one. So what we've tried to do is pull back on some things and in the hopes of getting some numbers back. That hasn't helped, so we're moving forward. It's time for us to go, and we got to get some work done and move this team forward. You know, so the reps that we had cut last week, we're still only working with two groups. Last week, we were down to a group and a half. It's not conducive, so we got to do what we need to do to move our team forward and get them ready to perform.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott, we are live at St. John Fisher. Jeremy and Joe, Brandon Bean joins us in about a half hour. We'll get to him in the 7:30 segment, so stay tuned for that. We'll carry that live for you. We'll get Sal at 8 o'clock as well. And overcast, kind of hazy day here at Fisher. The last week of camp, the Bills practice today, then Wednesday and Thursday, and then they are home for the preseason opener against the New York Giants on Saturday at Highmark Stadium, one of three preseason games. Tons of injuries. Tons of injuries for the Bills. Khalil Shakir, maybe the biggest name, right, with the high ankle sprain.
Yep.
Week to week for him. Add him to Caden Prather, Curtis Samuel, Elijah Moore in and out. Keon Coleman's been out here. On the offensive line, the good news is Spencer Brown started to make his way back after missing a good chunk of camp. It's a lot of injuries. And McDermott there sounds like a guy running out of players, right? So – they're getting through it as best they can, but they've got a lot of injuries.
Skeleton crew this weekend against the Giants,
yeah,
probably.
It might be. And
not that starters would play a lot anyway, but a lot of these guys are backup guys too.
Right, right.
Van Pran Granger is a guy they probably want playing in these games, and Alec Anderson, and that's why they're working out linemen. And it's the backups too,
yeah,
for this game. Wide receiver.
So the news, one of the big stories, of course, around the league is about James Cook, and that he is not practicing. He practiced all last week and then decided yesterday on a Sunday just to go ahead and go in street clothes. The Bills did not announce he'd be missing practice, and Elena Gitzenberg of ESPN after practice asked him, why did you miss practice today? And his answer was business. And then when she asked if you're going to practice tomorrow, he said business. So that led to a lot of hold-in conversations. Appears that we have our hold-in. And Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, with some context here, there's a piece up at NFL.com where the video's there, Mike Garofolo and Pelissero are talking about Cook here, and Pelissero lays out a couple different, I think, key points about this. And it's that the sides are not very far apart, which, you know, in the context of like, oh, James Cook is sitting out, you think, oh, things must be at a stalemate. Things must be breaking down. And Pelissero basically says it's not that. The quote to me that means the most here, Joe, is this is not a situation where the sides are completely breaking down. It does make some sense if James Cook has these contract negotiations hovering over his head that it would make sense for everybody to not have him practicing. Mm-hmm. Makes sense for everybody. You know, the Bills didn't comment on this yesterday.
Yeah.
But, man, it is that to me, I said it in the first hour quite a bit, and if you want to give us a call, 803-0550, not that far apart, makes sense for everybody.
Yep.
Not completely breaking down. Could it be that things are close enough that he decided to just street clothes for one day?
Yep.
It's possible. I don't know how often that is done, but that is very much possible. So you kind of got this very weird dynamic where you see that Cook is in street clothes, and there's 1,000 comments of, he's not any good anyway, they don't need him, he won't affect their win totals. Like, wait a minute, they might be close on a contract. Oh, all right, let me know. Let me know what I'm supposed to say about it. So I am not afraid of a contract for Cook. I think it's a good idea to get him signed to a reasonable contract. I don't think we have to worry about the $15 million, but, you know, I don't know which side thinks they are close, but there you go. There's the whole recap, everybody, about where things are right now, where things stand.
Yeah. And I believe that right now, with all of that being said, that a week ago, I really did not think a contract was going to get done. This is the first test, right? The first real, true test of what the Bills were going to do with a running back that was deserving of an extension, never came up with Devin Singletary. They never made the McCaffrey trade or the Barkley trade. They never drafted a guy in round one. Oh, that's not an extension. This is like the if they were to sign him to a modest deal, you know, comparatively to what he was looking for, he signs for $11.5 million, $12 million a year. It will still be, right, the biggest investment the Bills have made at the position.
Well, is it?
Even if you include the draft pick, too, especially, a second-round pick and then an extension into this player, I mean, you really won't be able to say anymore, like, well, they don't value, like, they can go dime a dozen at running back because, mm-hmm. look at this guy. They spent a good pick on him and paid him on top of that.
Isn't he already the biggest investment they've made at running back?
Just because of the draft pick?
Yes. Yeah, yes, I mean, it's the end of the second round, but.
But that's the most they've spent.
Yeah.
Yep, he is. Unless you want to get, you know, cute with it and include the things they got when they traded down twice, but I'm not feeling the need to do that. So, because that's part of the story, right, is that they backed up a couple of times before picking him, and they end up picking him and calling him a player that he really hasn't become. He's become a more fully formed all-around running back than I think a lot of us were expecting. Were most of us expecting J.D. McKissic 2.0?
Right.
Because that's who they had tried to sign. And honestly, for the pick, maybe, yeah, it's Brandon this, like they did see more in there. Because who would ever spend a second-round pick on a running back that you would only expect to be a pass-catching running back? That typically does not happen. Right. Typically does not happen.
Unless you were really looking for that in that offense at that
right.
time.
But I wonder if they thought, he's this now, and we think there's more in there as a skill set. And yeah. that would have ended up being true. Like, he has been far great. I think this is fair to say, right? He's developed into a player that is much better as a runner than he is as a pass catcher.
Was that three coordinators ago, though? I mean, is he
maybe right as Dorsey shows up?
Okay.
Right as Dorsey shows up.
John in Florida is up on the phones here. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I wanted to call in, Jeremy. You and I were having a discussion in chat. Joe, I don't know if you saw it, but good morning to you as well. You're very adamant about the idea that it would be impossible for a player to, you know, be politically correct with the media and not speak their actual minds. When I think that we see examples of that every day in the NFL when players take the podium and speak to you guys in the media. Right? We're talking about some of the most well-trained media humans on the planet outside of, I mean, probably politicians, right? You cannot state that a player holding out for a couple of mil on a team, right? This team has the NFL MVP. It's been reported that the two contract extensions that he has signed, he could have fought for more money, even though they were, yes, record-setting deals. It was widely reported that they could hold out for more money. And we've had players like Milano and Bernard, and, I mean, the list goes on. You guys know better than I do, I'm sure. All I'm saying, there's no way for us to know for sure that anyone else, like, how they feel about it. But to pretend that it would be impossible that his peers might feel some kind of way when they have taken team-friendly deals, they are all in to get a championship, and you have one outlier who's kind of seemingly making a huge distraction over what we would consider an insane amount of money, but what they might consider not to be an insane amount of money. I just think that it's impossible to know, and I think that it's probably pretty realistic to assume that someone might feel some sort of way and just not be saying that to you guys in the media. That's kind of my whole argument on the case.
Right, the idea that players would grow resentment for what Cook is doing.
Not necessarily resentment towards the player to where it's going to be tangible, but resentment towards the idea of, is this guy really a part of our team? If everyone else is doing things, making sacrifices and making career decisions to try and win a championship, and then you got a guy on the side who's like, well, I would rather have $2.5 million more than chase a championship with you guys. I just think it's impossible to say that every player is going to be like, no, yeah, I'm totally cool with that.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah.
Wouldn't the players that got paid be okay with it?
Yeah.
Because Khalil Shakir did that. this summer or this spring. So did Greg Rousseau. So did Terrell Bernard. Like, but these guys got it paid immediately.
Yeah.
So wouldn't they empathize more than anybody with Cook looking to take the next step in his career, getting that extension security for the long term when all of those players did the exact same thing? They just got it done way quicker.
Right. I mean, part of what John is getting there is he said all these team-friendly deals, these guys taking less for a championship. I don't know how true that all is. It's one of the it's one of the guarantees that you get in sports. Everybody that signs, you know, he had more on the table to go somewhere else, and he liked it here. Like that is
that's everywhere.
It's baked into so many contract announcements. He actually took less to go to Tampa. Turns out he took less to go to so and so. And we never see what the other offers are. You know, like Josh Palmer.
That one, the Chris Godwin one, is the only one where he actually did get
he
to see the
He took less to, okay, yeah.
We got a number on that? It was like $20, $30 million?
Sure.
But that's like the only one you ever learn about.
And like, let's get to Josh Palmer. Did he take less to come here, or were the Bills the highest bidder? Right? Joey Bosa and Larry Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt. And, you know, at the end of the day, these teams, and this is not specific to the Bills, lots of teams do this. They want to, of course, sell the idea of family this, we're all in this together. And the moment they decide a player's not worth it, that guy's walking out the door. Gabe Davis was everything the Bills ever wanted. They had a price on him. And would he have taken less? Well, how much less should he take? He got $13 million from the Jaguars. Should he take six? Or should he have a career? So the concept is ask any former player anywhere ever, and you're going to get like a 98% return rate of – oh, the players are going to support the players. The players want players to get
paid. Oh, yeah.
That is it's the culture of the league is for the players to want the players to get paid. The salary cap exists, of course, to make tough decisions. It exists to, in part, try and keep the league even, try and keep the league keep parity alive, have that in place. But the decisions about who to pay and what to pay come down to the cap. The players are on the same side. And you know, could there be resentment for James Cook in the locker room because he wants to get paid what he believes is a fair number? The difference between Cook's situation and the other players might simply be that those players got offers and they thought, that looks pretty good. And the Bills offer to Cook, again, the report is they're not that far apart. So if I've got a report that says they're not that far apart, I don't know why I should treat James Cook like a bad guy.
Yeah.
Maybe he's thinking, oh, we're not that far apart. I want to get this over the line. And, you know, John calls in. Like the genesis for the conversation is, could players pretend or say that they're okay with it and behind closed doors be mad about it? Maybe. You don't often get guys coming out and saying they don't like it. Like Le'Veon Bell's situation was one because he sat out the year. Like,
right.
I need you to get here. You had Steelers players calling out Aaron Rodgers before he signed because they're like, are you with us or not? Like, I want to know, are you with us or not? I feel like Cam Hayward said something to that effect. You're just not likely to get players mad at Cook about it, especially in training camp.
Did you see CeeDee Lamb this weekend?
No.
Micah Parsons wrote a long letter asking for a trade and saying, I'm done with the Dallas Cowboys. And what was CeeDee Lamb's response? Pay this man.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, at his own team. And I think Dak Prescott maybe said something similar to, like, the Cowboys. The Parsons situation is more far gone than the Cook situation, maybe by a lot. And what's there? That guy said, I'm done here.
Yeah.
And what are his teammates saying? Just pay him. Pay him. And I think in this situation, you don't have Cook. You don't have Cook asking for a trade. You don't have Cook saying, I'm done with the Buffalo Bills. You don't have Cook not showing up to things. So far, you have one day where he rode the bike instead of practiced. And I doubt heavily that – I mean, I would doubt heavily there would be any player in that locker room. I know there's a lot of players in there. So, you know, one out of 90, maybe. But I would doubt heavily that there is a group of players that are holding bitterness towards James Cook because he's trying to get $14, $15 million instead of 11 or 12.
Yeah,
when he has showed up for 99% of the work.
And I guess could it advance to that? If he misses games, it's funny.
That would be a little different.
The phrase business decisions. Players are going to have a lot less respect for players that make business decisions. They're going to see that on tape. They're going to see that on film. Making a business decision to miss a Sunday practice in training camp, you know, it's just like I just don't think it moves the needle that much.
Right.
And if you're Cook or if you're
any one of these players right now, this is still practice. You know, you're out here practicing. The NFL machine has turned all this into everybody's focused so much on it, and we're a part of it. Like, it's not lost on me. People care. And is he getting bad advice from his agent? Well, if you think it's bad advice, it might work. You know, one of the things about this, and this is where the two parties involved, like, Bean might be very comfortable paying Cook $10 million. And if he gets that deal for 3 years, $30 million, what would people say? What would people say? Wow, Cook won? Because the Bills are not going to pay a number they're not comfortable with. They might offer $9 million, and if he signs for $9 million, great. And they may get pushed to $10 million. But whatever the deal ultimately comes to be, we end up saying, wow, the Bills really like this number, and so does the player. That's how Benford and Rousseau and Bernard sign. Like, in the case of Shakir and Bernard, I want to go for those two especially. Like, what was their leverage right now? Play another year, go to free agency.
Yep.
They could have. They were not going to get franchise tagged because they're not that caliber of players. So it's, hey, would you like $40 million to stay here? Mm-hmm. Sure. That seems like a fair offer for what I'm getting. And for Cook, I don't know. Like, if you want to say, it's what makes it so odd. Thanks for the phone call, John. That you would almost say, like, if you're close, you would be at camp and you'd be there and you wouldn't worry about it. And here's Pelissero, Tom Pelissero. His latest is basically it makes sense for him to not practice because this is hanging over his head and the sides are not that far apart. I don't know. I don't think the players resent him at all, and I don't think that's likely. And ask, you know, you don't have to talk about politically correct players talking about their teammate right now. Ask former players what happens in holdouts. They'll all say guys are never going to get mad about a guy wanting to get paid. They all say that. I'll talk to Jerry Ostrowski today on the Bills Squad Show. I feel like he'll say that. Oh, players are never going to get mad at a player for wanting to get paid. They might think it's not going to work,
yeah,
but they're not going to get mad at that guy. So if he misses games, that's a different story. And, you know, we're very, very far from games. We're actually a month away from the NFL kickoff. It's a month from today.
Yeah. For Eagles and Cowboys?
Eagles and Cowboys. A month from the kickoff. So Micah Parsons going to play in that game?
Yes. Yes, he is.
It'll all be much ado about nothing again?
I would bet yes. It's going to be much to do about nothing. Although, will he get extended? Him playing on the extension, Jerry Jones takes this to the wire. Parsons is acting like, hey, you can't do that this time. You got to pay me a year out. You cannot take this to – what did he do with Dak? Didn't he franchise tag him twice?
Yeah.
He took him through his rookie contract and then tagged him twice. Maybe Parsons is telling him right now, like, nuh-uh, you're not doing that with me. Like, yeah. I'm not saying – well, I guess he is saying I'm done here. But behind closed doors, he might be saying, I'm not done here. Just know you're not playing that game with me. Like, if I'll play for you, but you got to do this deal a year out. I'm not waiting 2 years.
And then there's also a part of this that kind of parallels with the Bills. Some of the reporting in Dallas, is that Jerry Jones usually tries to get guys to play for less by selling the idea that playing for the Cowboys is special. Like, oh,
right,
you're part of America's team. This is the Dallas Cowboys. And players maybe 20 years ago thought, like, yeah, good point. What do they think now? All right, congratulations. Why would I take $5 million less per year?
Yeah.
Because you're the Dallas Cowboys.
You got players now that are not old enough to remember the Dallas Cowboys being any sort of contender.
Yeah.
Like, serious contender. They haven't made it to a conference championship game, right, since, like, 95? There's no players in the – none of their players were born in 95, I bet. Or actually, maybe a couple of them were.
Like a kicker?
Maybe Prescott. 95 would be 30.
Yeah.
But not old enough to remember, right? Like, a kicker to remember it, you'd have to have been – born in the late 80s, and you don't have players like that anymore. So what's the reputation of the Cowboys? It might not be what Jerry Jones thinks it is to those guys.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones will each play a good amount in the first two preseason games for the Colts.
Okay. That's going to be Richardson, isn't it?
I suppose
I want it to be Richardson. More exciting. More exciting player. I don't know. I'm still open to him being good. His deep ball is so good. It's like nobody can make that work.
That's all he's got.
But if you told me a quarterback is awesome at chucking the ball deep and is amazing running, sign me up. Let me try to figure out the easy stuff, because he's got two things that are maybe the hardest. How many quarterbacks in the league have those two things as
well,
good as he does?
Didn't we find out?
Allen does.
Didn't we find out with Allen and Mahomes that the easy stuff is actually the hard stuff? Like, those two were guys that could create and wing it down the field,
yeah.
And the league made them make the shorter throws.
Is it hard for them as much as it is just hard to keep them doing it over and over and over and over?
I'm not saying it's hard for them. I'm saying it's hard for most. That's the harder stuff. The shorter stuff, yes. Taking the layups, taking the stuff that you have to take when you need to.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see about that.
But again, you're kind of saying like the willingness to do it. Not necessarily your accuracy.
Willingness,
and
processing.
Most players are more accurate 10 yards than 60.
Maybe. But there are tighter windows. I need you to make this throw to the boundary, you know, on a whatever, on a tightly covered man situation. Like that might be tougher to hit that dot than it is to throw it over the top for a guy to go win, I don't know, Alec Pierce to go win you a ball. Anyway, 803-0550 is our phone number. Bills GM Brandon Bean scheduled to join us when we return. So don't go anywhere. We can ask some questions about James Cook. And I tweeted out last night, Bean's going to be on at 7:30. And let me tell you, people have expectations. I've been told a number of things I need to ask. There have been some UFC gifts sent our way. I think it'll be just fine. I think we'll get along just fine. But, hey, we'll find out. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to jump on and grab a phone call. Bills GM Brandon Bean when we return. And Sal at 8 o'clock here as we roll with another practice from St. John Fisher today. Coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher brought to you by Fiegel, Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. All right, good morning. Jeremy and Joe live from St. John Fisher. And without further ado, joined by Bills General Manager Brandon Bean. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you guys.
Welcome.
It's nice. It's a good morning. We do these walks. It's been a little warmer. This one's nice. Nice cool day.
Yeah, cool day. It's going to be 86. It's been a warm camp. Not too bad, but nice to get onto the fall weather. Feels a little more like football each and every day. So that's good. Easy to start with here. James Cook yesterday shows up, street clothes, says business when asked why he's not taking part in practice. Was that a surprise to have that happen?
Yeah, you know, it's not something we were fully aware of until, you know, shortly before practice. And so, I get it. I understand it's the world we're in, I guess, of how players want to respond and things like that. You know, love James. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we want all our guys practicing. We know that. I mean, we got some guys out, you know, due to injuries or soft tissue and stuff like that. So we're trying to get as many guys on the practice field as we can and start preparing for this first preseason game. And hopefully we'll get him back out there soon. But, remains to be seen whether he's going to show it today or not.
When you spoke about him earlier at camp, I think a lot of people kind of came away with the tone that constant contact with him and his agent, with you and his agent, or your team and his agent, and it felt to me like there has been a dialogue, and Tom Pelissero reports that that is the case and that there's not been a breakdown. In fact, he says that it's not believed that things are too far apart with this.
Yeah, I mean, without getting into things, there's been constant communication with his agent, either with myself or Kevin Megank and with Jimbo. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I wish we weren't here. This is my ninth season here. We've never had a player miss due to a contract or anything like that, so that's disappointing for me. It's not something we want, not something we're looking forward to. But at the end of the day, it's, like I said earlier, it's kind of the – sometimes can be the way of the world, and so we'll deal with it the best we can. Like I said, hopefully, you know, I'd love to see Jimbo out there today. I don't know that answer at this point this morning. Whether that will happen or not, but if it's not today, hopefully tomorrow, and we'll keep trying to, or the next day. I think we got a day off, but hopefully get him back out there soon.
you mentioned it's almost incredible that it's been this long without something like this at a training camp here. Is that fair to say then that this has been your one of your toughest negotiations since you've been the general manager?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. A lot of negotiations can be tough. I just think, you know, people choose to handle it how they choose. And we, you know, you guys have been around our program. We have a lot of, you know, really good guys that don't, you know, don't want to miss. And Jimbo doesn't want to miss. I know that. And so I'm sure it's painful for him to make that decision. And like I said, we'll continue the dialogue with, you know, with him and hopefully, you know, get it resolved and get him back out there. Like I said, I'm practicing a couple hours. We'll see, you know, whether that's this morning or we'll, if not, we'll try again and get it back out for the next one.
We just had a call about this that, you know, some fans will think like, oh, this is a distraction in that it's eating up storylines, eating up, you know, airtime headlines. But the call was about, like, the players and it being a distraction. And that always seems to me, like, players around the league especially are always very supportive of their teammates. Any distraction for the players or very much seems like that never bleeds into their work on the field, what's going on with James?
Yeah, I mean, our guys have been around. It feels like no matter what's going on, if that's not a distraction, then this can be a distraction. Like, you're only distracted if you let it be a distraction, and I think Sean does a good job of keeping these guys dialed in and focused, and I know that'll be the message. And, you know, Josh, you know, has been here so long, knows how we do things, and I know he'll make sure to keep that offense, and you know, those guys are the most affected, I guess, by, you know, Jimbo not being in there. And, you know, you almost have to, you know, trying to figure out how you treat it, you almost have to treat it like, you know, like it's an injury or whatever, even though it's, you know, like it's not. Hey, next man up, you know, Ray Davis, Ty Johnson, Darrington Evans, Frank Gore, like, you guys are up, take advantage of your opportunities. Let's spin a little bit of an annoyance into a positive.
Yeah. One thing, you know, as this conversation kind of percolates, and around the league this will happen, paying running backs. It's been like a buzz thing for probably 5-6 years in the NFL. And people might wonder if there's a philosophical value placed on the position. You know, sometimes you have a position or a value on a player. How about value on a position, and would you rule out the idea of big running back money, big money for contracts for a running back? Because that is something around the league that does get talked about quite a bit.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can go with it. At the end of the day, I don't think you can make, you know, just cold, hard decisions, hey, I don't pay running backs or I do pay running backs. I think every situation is its own, and so you're always trying with any deal, running back, receiver, linebacker, whatever it is, you're always trying to find what you think is the sweet spot that makes sense for you and for the player. You know, in this offseason, you know, we found it with pretty much everyone we tried to get a deal done. He was the one. And that's probably why we're at where we are. We got a lot of the deals done that, you know, that we tried, and it's well known. We tried to get something done with Jimbo, and unfortunately, you know, it takes two, and both sides have to agree on what that number is. And obviously, that hasn't gotten there. But I'm not sitting here saying you don't pay running backs. I think you just have to find what the sweet spot is. And, you know, you're paying Josh Allen, you're paying, you know, two tackles premium. You know, we're paying a lot of guys on this team. We paid Khalil Shakir. We brought in a Josh Punt. We're like, you're paying a lot of guys. So you can't pay everybody. And, you know, there's other guys that want to be paid that haven't been paid either. And, you know, that's sometimes a decision. We've seen, you know, unfortunately, a Tremaine Edmonds have to leave, you know, a Gabe Davis. You name the player, you'd love to keep them all, especially when you draft them like those guys and like James. You know, we've drafted him, we've developed him, and he's done a great job developing himself. You would love nothing more than to keep him, but I got to make sure it fits under the whole umbrella, not look at each deal in a silo.
Bills GM Brandon Bean joining us here.
On Cook, just going back to even when you picked him and how he's developed, I remember you used the term subback, I think, at the night that you drafted him. Mm-hmm. And that was right after the J.D. McKissic thing, so that would have made sense for the team at that time. Did he even surprise you with the full skill set maybe that he's developed and the runner that he has become? Or did you think even then maybe like subback was what he was in the immediate, but that there was more in there that he's kind of, you know, fully formed turned into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you know, college is a projection business, right? That guys, how some guys are used in colleges, you know, you see different ways they're used in the pros. Some are used exactly the same. But at Georgia, you know, they had another back there as well. And so James wasn't even the starter. He was more in that sub role and really liked what he did. But he didn't get a lot of opportunities as an inside runner here. So we knew at a minimum we felt we strongly had a sub back, a guy that we could develop more in the passing game, saw his workout, thought he had good, you know, good enough hands to help us do that. Obviously the speed is there. That's what showed, you know, in SEC play. But to his credit, I think he's really, you know, learned how to become an inside runner and be a threat there where, you know, that makes him more dangerous because – you know, the defense doesn't know that it's automatically a perimeter run or some type of passing play when he's in the game. It makes it, you know, I guess at the end of the day, it gives Joe Brady more options with him. And so that's why we've moved him into that role. And like I said, had a really good year last year and going into year four. And like I said, we'll see if we can get something done. If not, you know, he knows that we would try again after the season. And so just if we don't get something done now doesn't mean that we can't, you know, get him before he's free agent.
One of your stated goals this offseason was to bolster your defense through free agency, through the draft. How early can you see returns on that? I mean, it's training camp. You've seen mini camps, but you're getting to know these players, whether it's Maxwell Harrison out with a knee injury, TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson, on and on. You know, looking at the group as a whole, how early do you feel like you can get a feel for it?
Yeah, I mean, it's still very early. It is. I think, you know, Saturday against the Giants, you know, just getting different competition, going against different guys. You've been going against these same guys, even though it's not been in pads since, you know, late May and through early June. And I mean, we've only had so many padded practices just by the way the ramp up process is in the NFL. And so we're still learning them, but I mean, it's nice to see some of the different things, the different nuances that a TJ Sanders brings versus a Deion Walker versus a Michael Hoyt. Obviously, Joey Bosa is the most well-known name that we added. But what we tried to do was just kind of refresh, you know, kind of replenish this group, make some tweaks, and add as many different options to give Sean McDermott, Bobby Babich, you know, and our defensive line coaches different ways how we play. You know, if we're getting a team that is just going to air it out, having as many options to get after the passer, but if we have teams that want to, you know, line it up and run it north and south on us, that we can anchor down in there and stop the run. You know, that's ultimately, you can have as many pass rushers as you want. If you can't stop the run, it's hard to get to third and long and let those guys pin their ears back.
You know, you say different there. It was more than just, you know, refreshing the defense. It was about actually changing the amount of things you were able to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think just trying to, you know, one of the things that we tried to add some more interior rush. You know, it's hard inside to, you know, for an offense if you're facing two interior rushers. And because if you got one guy in there, let's just say Ed Oliver's been one of our better interior rushers. You got one, they can turn the protection to him and put two on him, and then your other guy's got a single. We need that single to win, whether that's a guy that we bring, you know, that's a, you know, plays in on base downs and reduces inside on sub downs, or a guy like a TJ Sanders, guys like that that can rush inside. Hoyt's done some stuff and the Rams, how they've used him. And we think we got, you know, we've added a variety of pieces that Bobby and Sean can use depending on the matchups that we have.
Bills GM Brandon Bean with us for a few more minutes here. There's a lot of, like, talk around the league, star players around the league that you'll see reports that they're asking for a trade. Some of them are even writing it themselves. Is it nearly impossible for you or other contending teams to pursue top players like that at this time of the year specifically? Like, when you see a top player becomes available in training camp, you've already had your offseason. Like, is it almost kind of a non-starter just because of the time of the year, or is there still a little bit of flexibility for you and for other teams in this cap situation?
Yeah, I mean, each team's got its own situation, and it's more than, you know, a lot of times people say this, you know, this is how you could make this happen. Trade this guy, do this, convert these two players, and you can get them in 25. But the problem is, what does 26 look like and what does 27? You would hate to make a move like that, and you're going, man, I got 25, worry about 26 later. That that's easier said than done. So it is very hard when you're talking about, whether you're talking about premium pass rushers or big time receivers or whatever position you're talking about. It's very hard to pay a guy 30, 35, 40, 45 million, whatever these players are asking for. That's separate of what you got to give up, whatever assets those are, whether it's players' picks. The cap is probably the biggest issue. I mean, we're always going to be tight around here when we're paying Josh and the guys that we're paying to protect him and then get after the other team's passers, the rushers that we've tried to put together.
Bill's GM, Brandon Bean, joining us here on WGR. Keon Coleman, he's one of your healthy receivers at this point. We've got to talk receiver at some point, right? That's what we're going to do. Keon Coleman's healthy. That's the good news. Have you seen a response from him?
Yeah.
Like you've wanted?
Yeah. I think I've been really – and it's not just here. Like, I've seen it all off season. I think he came back – his agent and I've developed a pretty decent relationship. I knew him, but didn't know him very well before we drafted Keon. And so he's one of those agents that he gave Keon his opinion too of, hey, these are the things I see that can help you. And so Keon and him and us had a kind of what his plan would be. These are the areas that we want you to attack in the off season. And I was getting a lot of videos of him training and doing things, and you could just see over time, like, him beefing up a little bit, just growing into his body. Like I said, he was 21 when we took him, so he's not a fully grown man yet, even though he's a big guy. But he worked his butt off all spring, and I think we saw it from the minute he walked in the door at in late April and through OTAs. And but he's still working into that player. He's still a young guy, and it's not going to be perfect. We shouldn't expect him to look like a five-year vet at this point. But I'm pleased with who he is. He's playing stronger. He's playing sturdier. He's obviously getting even more chemistry with Josh. Unfortunately, when the wrist deal happened last year, the offense has to keep rolling. It sometimes it can be hard to work someone back in. It wasn't like we weren't scoring a lot of points with him out, and so I think all that combined with just, how we were playing and how he was trying to learn to play with, whatever soreness remained, he just wasn't able to make the same impact that he was making prior to the injury.
When it comes to that offense, a lot of points, we talked with Joe Brady, and he sat here and said he's got to find a way to get better. And, thinking about the things he wants to get better, he was a little bit reluctant to say what it was. He's like, I don't tell anybody out there what we're going to do, but are there small things, small goals, like things to sustain? Because, it's a high standard that offense last year did set, and trying to get back there, of course, has got to be a goal and even pushing beyond.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, Jeremy. I think, ultimately it's, to have the points that we put up and the yards and then have that few turnovers, that was really impressive. That's hard to do. Sometimes it can even just be, a fumble that, we were able to get back on that we didn't lose. But I thought Josh did an excellent job of still playing free like we want him to play, not playing conservative, yet still taking care of the football. And, our running backs did an excellent job of not losing fumbles. So from that standpoint, turnovers are key. You look at how many turnovers we created on defense versus how many, our ratio, that was a huge – if you just look every year, there's all these analytic stats that people run and all this stuff. If you just go pull up every week once you've had 3 or 4 weeks and just start watching every week and look at the teams that are way in the plus category of turnovers versus the guys who are – or the teams that are negative, go look at the win-loss column. It's crazy. Again, we got all these advanced metrics and stats, but that one is as true as can be to team success and wins and losses. So it's, I would love if you would just say, hey, you can repeat what you did last year. I would take it right now. You always want to try and refine things and get better, and that will be the goal. But what, how it all played out was a really strong performance by Joe Brady and Josh and crew.
Max Harrison, one of those players you're kind of counting on for takeaways, and a setback for him. But of course, I mean, how big was the exhale when it came back? Like, all right, it's not, worst case scenario.
Yeah, huge exhale. You hear non-contact. I did not see it. It was on the other field when they were doing individual. So, I didn't hear about it till literally probably a quarter of the way through practice, through team periods. Nate Bresky came over and told me, and man, just. you know, lump in my throat the rest of practice, hard to focus, you know, just, and, you know, went in and checked on him. We sent him back to Buffalo to get all the MRIs and all the images that was needed. So to get that call that later that night to, you know, it, you know, his ACL was intact and that what it was, and yeah, huge relief. It obviously stinks. You know, I think Sean mentioned it and I agree. It's kind of like the Cole Bishop thing a little bit a year ago, missing a lot of unfortunate reps. There's no great time to get injured. There's not. But to miss, like, right when you're getting into true padded football really stinks. But Maxwell is such a positive young man. I mean, I saw his parents at the Red-Blue game, and they were definitely relieved, too, at the situation. And everyone's supporting him. He's once he learned what the injury, he's just still had that smile on his face. I think that's who he's always going to be. It's funny how – you know, from when Tre'Davious was here, when you first got him, how many similarities there are. And Tre'Davious was doing a great job, and I'm sure he'll pick it up when Max gets back, of kind of putting his arm around him and kind of showing him the ropes. And so we'll support him. He'll obviously be behind, so we'll have decisions to make when we get to the start of the season where that, you know, puts him.
Quickly on Trey, all accounts out here are that he looks good, like really good.
Yeah, he's done a great job. Really proud of him. And just it's been fun to see – that jovial Trey, just excited, you know, hopefully past all those injuries. You know, by the time he left here, it had been two straight years. And when you have season-ending injuries like he did, that can just, you know, take its toll on you. This is frustrating. These guys pour everything, you know, into their craft, into their, you know, and it's not just them. It's their whole family feels the weight of what's going on in their world. And so to see him just happy and free, obviously went to two different places last year. And, you know, when he came back, just a hug, man. It's, you know, it's great to be home. And just you love to hear that about your guys. You know the business is the business. Sometimes guys are going to leave, but you love it. You know, we've had players, him and, you know, Jordan Phillips, some of the others that have gone away and come back. And so it's been fun to watch him play. And, you know, we're gonna need him, you know, to help us over there opposite Christian.
And then on one more in the secondary, on Cole Bishop, who's dealt with a little injuries here through training camp. And obviously there was an injury last year for him. His availability, injuries, is that kind of the one thing you feel like that, I won't say it's a concern, because otherwise you guys would have an expectation for him to take a step into year two.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he had a really good spring, and, you know, again, fortunately this time it wasn't what last year was, to, you know, miss a month or so, whatever that ended up being. So hopefully get him back here real soon. You know, I don't know that we can get him back in time to play this week or not. I'm not sure where that'll be. It'll probably be close, but I think we'll get him back out there soon. And he was doing really good, and I thought him and T-Rap, you know, we're pairing well together, but it'll still be a battle. He's got to go out and prove it, not only in practice, but once he can get in these preseason games, if not this week, you know, hopefully that Bears week.
And finally, before I let you go, goal for the year. I mean, we're talking the margins, right? It's small. I kind of want to make golf analogies to you, because that's how we talk a lot, but like, it's the littlest bit to finish it. So like, does it ever get, I mean, how frustrating does it get? How motivating is it to get that last little bit?
Yeah, listen, when you lose that last game, it's a kick in the teeth. There's no other way to say it. It hurts you. It breaks you down. You feel tears in your eyes. You feel like you let, you know, not only your family, but you let the city down and Western New York. That's the God's honest truth. It is painful. But I am one of those ones, I'm not going to sit there and mourn. You know, I'm going to figure this thing out, and I'm going to keep swinging the sword, and as long as Terry Pegula will let me swing it, and we're going to figure it out. And I'm not going to give in. Like, we are going to keep, you know, I think I said it at that one of the pressers, whether it was the one right after the season, but we're going to keep kicking the door in. We're going to keep it kicking, and at some point knock it down and get it done. And, you know, I'm not deterred or anything like that. This is a hard league as a whole. Obviously, the AFC is stacked, and, you know, it's always going to be a gauntlet. That's the challenge of it. This is a hard league. That's why so many fans love it, and that's why it's so hurtful when you go as far as we've gone for so many years. I say it all the time. The further you go, the worse it hurts. So I can't sit here and say, you know, it doesn't sting. It doesn't, you know, punish me. And I don't just want to, you know, curl up in the fetal position and cry my eyes out. But at the end of the day, it's how you got to get back on that horse, rebuild what you need to do, get your staff, this is how we're going to do this, get everyone in alignment and start the journey immediately on, you know, at this point, 2025.
Bill Sheehan, Brandon Bean, any questions for us? Yeah, what do we miss?
I don't know. I want to know who's got the low score between you guys out here.
He said, we played a couple weeks ago, if I beat him that day, I would be officially declared better than him at golf, yeah, and he made a 50-foot putt to beat me at 18.
That is true. That did happen.
I kind of feel like is a little lucky.
50-footer. Pin in,
pin
out.
I feel like I still should get to claim it. It took a 50-footer.
It was a JJ Spawn bomb. It was like –
Pin was in,
was
I think,
legit.
Too.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't play enough. The tales of your golf exploits, I mean, you know, there's a buzz around camp about how your game is these days. So
yeah.
You know, who gives you the best fight on the team?
Good question. I mean, Josh probably is the most because he does all the smack talking while he's out there. He wants to make sure you know how far he can hit it. But we didn't get to play as much this year, unfortunately. Maybe only played once because of his wedding and stuff like that.
That would make sense. Didn't. Yeah,
couple priorities above golf.
He was
life,
busy.
You know, life keeps getting in the way of golf. Yeah. I'm running into that as well. All right, well, thanks for going so long with us here. We kept you for a while and appreciate it very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Brian.
Good to see you guys.
Bill's GM, Brandon Bean here from St. John Fisher on WGR. All right, back here from St. John Fisher. We got to get another break in. Sal's seated with us, ready to rock, to follow up Brandon Bean's comments on James Cook, who they found out wasn't going to be practicing just before practice. That's kind of the story he told. So, you know, I asked, were you surprised by this? We'll run through all the things he had to say, get Sal's thoughts on it, on Cook not here, not practicing. He is here, but not practicing. He rode the bike yesterday. We'll see what happens today. It's a closed practice to the public. We'll give you the updates. Sal coming up as well here on WGR.